This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan.
Welcome to episode 119 of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning. We've got a great show tonight. I have a delightful guest on the show who is the oldest person I have ever met in my life. She recently celebrated her 101st birthday. So I thought I'd start the show off with a song I wrote to my grandson when he was a little boy. And this is a version with my band, Damascus Road, and myself. It's called When You Get As Old As Me. Good afternoon, Betty.
Yes, good afternoon.
Okay, what do I call you? Should I call you Betty, Miss Betty, Sister Betty, Grandma Betty? What should I call you?
I like Grandma Betty.
Grandma Betty.
Okay.
Okay, I want you to tell everybody listening to us how old you are.
Well, I was 101 on February 5th, 1923.
February 5th. You were 101, 2023. February 5th, 2023.
I'm sorry, 101 on February 3rd. Did I make a mistake there?
I think you got the years off. But anyway, 2023, you were 101 years old.
Uh-huh.
That's old.
I know it's old. My bones know it, too. Yes.
You're the oldest person I've ever talked to in my life.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you ever met anybody as old as that in your life?
Me?
Yes. Have you ever met anybody else that was over 100 years old?
No.
Okay. And I hope they didn't give you 101 Dalmatians for your birthday.
Okay. I don't know what I'd do with them. Okay.
So, okay, you were born February 3rd, 1922 then, right?
Right, right.
So, you were born just 3.5 years after World War One ended, and I figured it out. Warren Harding was president when you were born.
Okay.
And women had only been voting 2 years when you were born.
Wow.
So, where were you born?
Wait a minute. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay. Did you grow up in Cleveland?
No, it's a long story, Lawrence. My dad sent for my mother from Austria. He saw her picture and sent for her to come over, and they got married. And then later I was born.
So she was
He kept me for so long and then gave me up for, he put an ad in the paper for somebody to take me.
Okay, let me back up and ask you something. So your mother was what we would call a mail order bride?
Yes.
Wow. So he just saw her picture. All right. And so then he put you up for adoption. How old were you when you were
16 months?
Did you ever know your dad and mom?
No. I had a half sister. And she told me that he was very mean. He was a very mean German, but that's okay. Now, he did come to see me one time after my dad that raised me. He came to see me. But I had no feelings for him, you know.
So what was that like? Do you remember how old you were when he came to see you?
Oh, I was married to Bill, so I was like 22.
And was that awkward? Did you feel?
Yeah, it was very awkward. He said, "Give your old dad a kiss." And I thought, my dad that raised me is out in the kitchen. You're not my dad.
Wow. That took a lot of nerve for him to ask you that.
It did take a lot of nerve, yes.
And so you were 16 months. How about your mom? What do you know about your mother?
They said she went back to Austria and died later. So that's all I know.
Okay, so you were adopted when you were 16 months old?
Uh-huh.
What were your parents like? What were your adopted parents like?
Well, you know what? They were supposed to adopt me, and they didn't do that. So I found out I must have been a foster child. But, well, they took me to raise. There were some problems. My mother that raised me got hooked on morphine, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I was 8 years old, they sent me to the children's home. And then when I was 12 years old, they sent me to a Catholic convent.
So did you come back and live with them for a little while?
Yes, I did. I came back and they finished raising me. Yes.
So were they mean or were they nice?
Well, they were nice. They were nice.
Okay.
It could be my mother, you know, under the influence of morphine, you know.
Did she have alcohol problems too, or was it just the drugs?
He had alcohol problems, yes, he did. And that's why I never wanted anything to do with alcohol or morphine or anything.
Yeah. So your mother was on morphine. How about your dad? Was he on alcohol too?
No, he was kind, no.
Okay. So you must have been, did you feel closer to him than her?
Beg pardon?
Did you feel closer to your adopted dad than you did to your mom?
I think so. Although, you know, you love them anyway, even though they were, you know, wrong, you still had a love for them.
That is so true, because I don't know if you knew this, Grandma Betty, but I used to work with foster children myself in my job in adoption, and it is really true. Some of those children that remember their parents abusing them, they still love their parents, and they still wanted to go back and be with them. It was
That's right, really amazing.
So, okay, you were 8 years old the first time you went into...
Children's home.
Do you remember that day?
Yes, I do. My mother had left my dad, and we were living in lighthouse keeping, if you know what that means.
I don't.
And I guess rented rooms. And okay. I went down to the 5 and 10 to buy my mother something for Mother's Day. I was 8. When I came back, the man at the hotel said, "You better go somewhere else." But I didn't. And I went up to, and they were waiting for me. Took her to jail and took me to the jury.
Oh, my goodness. So you came back from the dime store thinking you were going to give your mother a present, and then...
Beg pardon?
So you came back from the five and dime thinking you were going to give her a present, and,
yes.
and then you found out they took her, they were taking her to jail.
Jail, yes. And they had someone there from the county.
Yeah.
Humane or something, you know. And they kept me overnight. And I remember waking up the next morning and saying, "Mommy, I don't want to get up yet. I forgot I was in somebody else's house," you know.
Was it like an orphanage with a bunch of children there? Were there a lot of children there at the children's home?
Oh, yeah. A lot of children, uh-huh.
Well, were you afraid?
Beg pardon?
Were you afraid?
Oh, yeah, I cried myself to sleep at night.
Did you feel like you would never see your mom again?
I didn't know. No. But they did come and get me. I remember it was around Christmas time.
So do you remember how long you stayed in the children's home?
I think about a year.
Oh, my. Wow. So you went back home when you were 9, and then what, about 3 years later, you had to go to a convent?
Yes, they had to send my mother away he kept sending her away to get her cured. And so they would come and get me, you know. So I went to a Catholic convent. Yes.
How long were you there?
About 12 months, 13. My dad came to get me that day, I'll never forget, and... to take me. He wasn't allowed to take me unless he had a letter from the priest, but he took me anyway, so I was glad of that. But one day I was out scrubbing the convent steps, and this couple came up to me and said, "Would you like to go home with us?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I'm waiting for my mother and dad."
Oh, my. Wow. So they came back then about a year later, huh?
Uh-huh.
And then you stayed with them from there on out?
Well, yes. My mother, there was a lot of hard things, you know. She tried to turn on the gas and kill herself and all those things that go with it, you know?
Were you with her when that happened?
No, I came in and found her there, but she didn't succeed.
So you had quite a sad life. This is a...
I guess I did.
Very sad story.
I always loved the Lord and prayed to him, you know?
Yeah. So, did they take you to church?
Well, I went to the Catholic church with my dad, and then my mother and I went to a revival in the Methodist church one time, and I think the seed was kind of sown there for the Methodist church, you know?
Yeah.
So then when I could, Bill and I got married, and we we had Marie, and we thought we need to get our daughter in Sunday school and church. So we went to the Methodist church.
Okay. Well, now, you know, on this show, we play music. So I'm going to stop here, and I want to play a song. I hope you don't mind if I sing to you on this show.
You go ahead. Go ahead. Be my pleasure.
Yeah, you've heard me sing before, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
I try hard.
Okay.
I don't know if I sound that good, but I do try hard.
You do. You sound great.
So I'm going to start right now and play an old song. You probably have heard this song before. It's called In the Garden. Do you know that song?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Joy. tarry there. None other has ever known. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever.
This is Lawrence Tuning, the host of Me and My 88 Friends. Let's go back to the conversation I had with this amazing lady, Betty Rowe, who is our 101-year-old sister in Christ. So tell me about your marriage.
Well, I first saw Bill when I was like 11 or 12, but that was just a scene, you know. And then I moved up George's Run where he lived. We started dating at 15, and my mother broke us up because we was kissing too much.
Was he
so
the same?
We got married at 20. We got married at 20.
Were you both 15 years? Were you the same age?
No, he was 2 years older.
So the 17-year-old boy was kissing the 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
So she broke you up, huh?
Yeah.
So now what year did you get married to Bill?
1942.
Did he go off to the war?
He couldn't pass because of his heart. They said he could die at real young age and he lived to be 80. You know what I mean?
Oh, my goodness.
Another plan.
Yeah. So where did you settle? Where did the two of you spend most of your life?
Well, George's Run, called George's Run.
Okay. Now, that's near what town? What big town?
Steubenville, near where you saw Paul Dean.
Yeah,
whatever.
We went to a restaurant where Dean Martin used to hang out as a kid.
Yeah,
Steubenville,
about
Ohio.
12 miles away.
Right across the river from West Virginia, right?
Yeah.
So what did your husband do for a living?
He worked on a railroad. He was a car inspector.
Okay. So you were married for how many years?
66.
66 years. That's incredible. And
I know you had
two really wonderful children.
Yes.
And I think you told me that Ree is the oldest, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And we were laughing before. I've been in your home before. And we were gathered around the piano singing. A lot of us were singing together. And you remember the question that your daughter asked me?
She wanted to know if your teeth were real. Yes.
I thought, I'd never been asked that question before.
She'll never live that down, will she?
No. Let me just say something about Ree's husband, and I hope people listening will go to his website. He is a very gifted artist and painter.
Right.
And he has painted many, many, many pictures of rural life, and most of them in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And they are really wonderful, wonderful. He did one picture and named it after my aunt. My aunt, Martha, had a little country store, and so he had, it was a painting in Ohio where a bunch of people were gathered around a country store, and he named it Miss Martha's Store.
Yes.
But he did all kinds of pictures of Harley Davidson motorcycles and John Deere, and I believe you told me that he had some kind of deal with the company. He did things for that company, right?
Right.
And I told you earlier that my dad was a farmer in South Carolina, and somebody wanted to give her one of Davis's beautiful paintings of a John Deere tractor out in a field. And she turned them down. She says, I don't want it. It's a pretty picture. But she said, I spent my entire life paying off John Deere tractors. I don't want to be reminded of all the money we spent. But I got a picture of Maine. Out on the ocean looking at this lighthouse.
You told me the people in the boat was your granddaughter and her ex-boyfriend, right?
My daughter, Marie. No, it was granddaughter. You're right. It was granddaughter.
And I've got one of Elvis. A wonderful picture. It's just showing the back of his head and the pink Cadillac, and he's going into a movie, Love Me Tender, which was his first movie. And my grandson has one of all the Andy Griffith characters.
Oh, yes.
So, and I asked you before, did he ever paint a picture of you?
Well, at first I thought no, but then I do remember he hid me somewhere.
So you weren't the star.
I was one in the crowd.
You weren't the star, huh?
Yeah, no.
So I want to go back to your adopted mother. You've got a very sad story. Your father married your birth father married your mother. She was a mail order bride. She left him, and he put an ad in the paper. You said.
My real dad did.
Put an ad in the paper saying, I have this little girl I'd like to give to somebody.
16 months old, yes.
Yeah. And so then you had a family raised you, but your adoptive mother had an addiction problem with morphine and alcohol. And did she ever get free of that? Did she ever...
I kind of doubt it. Like I told you, when she died in that wreck, they gave me her purse, and her inside the purse was a hypodermic needle and a syringe. Mm. So she was leaning on it still.
And yet, with this background that you had, you came out normal, if that's the right word.
I was determined. I wanted a Christian home, Lawrence. And that's what God gave me.
So even back then, when you were a little girl, when you were going through all this, you still had this desire to have a relationship with God?
Right, right. You know, even in the Catholic Church, you were raised in the beginning with God and God. You remembered that,
yeah.
A little bit of Catholic training I had. But then when I went to the Methodist Church, that's when I jumped in with all feet, 4 feet.
Yeah. And I think I've been to that church before. Was that the church in Steubenville?
Uh huh.
That's a wonderful church.
Uh huh.
You know, when I was there, Grandma Betty, I sang at that church and preached for a week. And you know my song, The Anchor Holds, right? You've heard that before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there was a lady there at that church. She came to me and she was the wife of a Nazarene pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I enjoyed the song, but I'm wondering if you would sing it again if I bring my daughter.
Oh.
And she said, I need to tell you about my daughter. I said, my daughter used to sing a lot. She would sing in church a lot. And her little 5-year-old boy died in a house fire.
Oh my!
Everybody got out, but they couldn't get him out.
Oh!
And she said that she quit singing for a long time, but she said she came to her daughter came to her and said, "Mom, I can sing again. There's a song that I can sing. It's called The Anchor Holds." It said,
"Oh yes."
She said, "I said I would sing that song at 4 a.m. You know, to her, but." That's a great church. It really is.
Yes.
So that was the church. And but if I remember what you told me before, you went there a while before you actually gave your life to Jesus.
Well, I went to a Methodist church, but it was a different one. It was out in the country more.
Yeah.
But that's where Davis came over and invited us to the Church of God, yes.
Okay, so it was the Church of God where you accepted Christ, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, wait. I got to back up. I was Methodist when I accepted Christ.
Okay.
But then when Davis came and invited us over to Church of God, that's where I told you the preacher was Sister Lacey, and Billy married her daughter. And that's where we went.
Right. So that the night in the Methodist church, you told me you were 33 years old.
Yes.
And so it took you all the way up to 33 years to make that decision, even though you were praying as a little girl. Did you just not understand what you had to do?
I guess so. I didn't understand, no.
And then you told me that I'm repeating what we talked about before because our tape messed up and we lost our whole tape. But you told me before you didn't get saved at an altar in a church, did you?
No, I got saved at kitchen table at home.
Kitchen table at home.
Yes.
And you actually asked the pastor to come over, didn't you?
Yes, I had gone to church and was under conviction the night before. And I didn't go to the altar, but the next morning I was still under conviction. So I called the preacher and the evangelist, and they came down and prayed with me. That's where I got saved, yes.
So did you just sit them down at the table and say, I want to get saved?
Yes.
That's great. That's great for an evangelist who usually has to plead for people to come to the altar here. You just went ahead and said, let's do it.
Yeah.
And do you remember the feeling you had after you prayed?
It was wonderful. Everything was beautiful, you know. Yes.
That's great. You went ahead and got back. Now, did you get sprinkled or did you go under the water?
Well, I've been sprinkled as a baby and sprinkled when I was older in the Methodist Church, and then under Sister Lacey, the one that Billy married, her daughter, we went to the creek. Yes.
In the creek, huh?
Yeah, we got baptized in the creek.
So I think you're ready to meet the Lord. You've been baptized three times.
Yes.
And tell me about your husband. You said that he didn't come to the Lord when you did, right?
No, he a year later. He said he watched my life, and so he was under conviction in the choir, you know, and it was Easter Sunday morning. He was under conviction all week and wouldn't go to the altar. But Sunday morning, Easter Sunday, he went down to that altar, gave his heart to the Lord.
I still like altars.
I do, too. I don't like it when they take them out.
Yeah, I still like altars. I'm doing my math here now. You were 33 years old and were born in 1922. So you were, how old? You were 33 years old and 19. So you were about, what was that, about 1955, something like that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 1955. So you've been walking with the Lord 68 years.
Wow.
And I think it might be 69. It's probably 69 almost. But
all right.
That's a long time. That's a very long time.
Yes.
And remember the old song, It Gets Sweeter as the Days Go By?
Right. That's the truth. Yes, it gets sweeter.
You've learned that firsthand, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, we didn't talk about your son, Billy Jr.
Yeah.
I've known him since I was in college. He came down, he and Leanna, both are wonderful preachers. Leanna's a great preacher as well as Billy.
But they're both preaching now again.
They
still
are.
Yes.
But
they just took a church about six weeks ago.
Yeah, at New Philadelphia, Ohio. So they're back
they're
in Ohio.
Cold, right?
And they've pastored all over the country.
But they
pastored at my mom and dad's church in South Carolina, out in the country, as assistant pastors at first. Then many years later, they came back and were there for, I think, about 8 years, and they are some of my very favorite people. Mm-hmm. And I can see why they're my favorite people, talking to you. They had a great mom.
Oh.
And a great dad.
Oh, yes, great dad, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's great talking to you, and amazing that you've walked with the Lord all these years.
Yes, it's been great.
What's the toughest thing you ever went through as a Christian?
The toughest thing? Well, I would say, as a Christian, I'm trying to think, as a Christian, Jason when Jason died, passed away. Bill only had a son.
Yeah.
Jason,
grandson.
He died
of cancer.
Grandson. Yes, yes.
Yes, that was a... It's a wonderful Leanna thing, though.
She was so sure God was going to heal Jason. And I felt that way, too. But he healed him. He took him to heaven, you know.
And it's wonderful. We'll see. We'll all be up there. I like that old song, "When We All Get to Heaven."
Right, right.
So anything,
what a day that will be.
Anything else you want to say as we end our time?
Well, it's been a great journey, Lawrence. And I'm looking forward to seeing Jesus and Bill, yes.
A great journey.
Yes.
I like that thought because it is a journey.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that. They think you mm-hmm. just accept him one time and that's it. But it is a friendship relationship, and it's
right.
a wonderful thing. And you're a wonderful person. I'm so glad that you let me call you today and even call you back when the tape messed up.
It's okay. I enjoy you twice. Double.
Yes.
Double blessing.
Well, I hope to see you and on your 102nd birthday, I'm going to call you up and sing happy birthday
okay.
to you.
All right.
All right.
I'll
love you.
To do that. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
God bless you and yours. Yes. Goodbye.
Bye.
I have journeyed through the long dark night, out on the open sea. By faith alone, sight unknown, yet his eyes were watching me. The anchor holds, though the ship is battered. The anchor holds. Sails are torn. I have fallen on my knees as I face the raging sea. The anchor holds in spite of the storm. I've had visions, and I've had dreams. I've even held them in my hands. Oh, but I never knew those dreams could slip right through, like they were only grains of sand. Now I have been young, I am old. These eyes have seen, but it was in the night, through those storms of my life. Oh, that's where God proved his love. Anchor.
is better. The anchor holds, though the sails are torn. I have fallen on my knees as I face the raging seas. The anchor holds. In spite of the storm, I have fallen down on my knees. I have faced the raging seas. The anchor holds. The anchor holds in spite of the storm.
This has been a great experience for me to have this conversation with our 101-year-old sister in Christ, Grandma Betty Rowe. I hope that you will go to the website of Grandma Betty's son-in-law, Davis Barnhouse, if you want to look at some of his great paintings or if you would like to purchase a print of some of his paintings. He gives us a snapshot of rural America in an earlier time. They're wonderful. They remind me of the same feeling you get when you look at the paintings of Norman Rockwell. Go to his website. It's Dave Barnhouse FineArt.com. That's D-A-V-E B-A-R-N H-O-U-S-E F-I-N-E-A-R-T.com. DaveBarnhouse.com. Grandma Betty said at the end of this conversation that it's been a wonderful journey. I had met Betty Rowe many years ago because I'm great friends with her son, but I had never heard her give her testimony of God's wonderful intervention in her life, the great compassion and grace of the Lord to pick this little broken girl up and give her a life that she can say now at age 101, it's a great journey. That's the greatest way I know to describe it. Following Jesus is not just a religious act. It's not exactly the same as going to church. It's a friendship walk with Jesus Christ, God's Son. One of my favorite characters in the Bible is a man named Enoch. We don't know a whole lot about Enoch other than he was taken to heaven at the early age of 300 and something years old. Back then they lived to be 800 years old, 900 years old. But the other thing that the Bible says about Enoch is that he walked with God. I don't think there's anything greater than someone saying that about yourself. He or she simply walked with God. It's very obvious that Betty has walked with God. And you may be listening to her story, and you feel like, I wish I had a journey with Christ. Well, you need to do what Betty did in 1955, at the age of 33, as she sat at her kitchen table. She had called her pastor and a visiting evangelist and asked them to come over because she said, I want to know Christ. I want to have a personal relationship with him. I want to be saved from my sins. She sat there at that table, said a prayer, and has never been the same. And wherever you are listening to this, whether you're in your car or in your home, you can make a decision even right now, just like Betty did, and open up your life to Jesus and be what we call born again, born a second time. This is how you do it. You do it just like Betty did. You come to him and you say, Lord Jesus, I need you. There's an emptiness in me, and I need you. And I want to know you in a personal way. I want to walk with you. I want to have a friendship journey with you. So I come to you just like I am, but I confess to you that I'm a sinner. I have sinned and fallen short of your standard, and I ask you to forgive me. I simply say I'm sorry for my sins. I thank you, Lord Jesus, that you are the Son of God, and that you loved me so much that you shed your blood for me on the cross. And by doing that, you made a way for me to have my sins taken away and to be able to live forever. And I want to thank you for your love. I know you won't force yourself on me. You said, I stand at the door and knock. If anybody will hear me and open up, I will come. So I am voluntarily opening the door right now. And I'm saying to you, Jesus, come into my life. You're welcome to lead my life. Be number one in my life. I want to obey you. I want to follow you. Give me the courage to turn from all of my sins, and give me the courage to not be ashamed to tell anyone what you mean to me. Now, I basically just said the prayer. So if I've spoke too fast, just back the tape up and listen to it again. But if you will pray that prayer or the way you want to word it, but just come to him, turn your back on the old life, and give yourself to him, it can become a great journey for you too. I thank you all for listening tonight. And I thank my wonderful sister, Betty, for sharing her great story. I'm going to close with a song I was inspired to write right before and during a trip to Scotland. It's called Living in the Shadow of the Glory of the Lord. I hope you listen to us again next week. God bless.
Shadow of the glory of the Lord. things that used to matter have somehow lost their charm when compared to what shall be revealed. Now we see a shadow, a faint silhouette. One day all our hopes will be fulfilled. That used to matter have somehow lost their charm when compared to what shall be revealed. Now we see a shadow, just a faint silhouette. One day all our hopes will be fulfilled. Living in the shadow of the glory of the Lord, looking forward to what is yet to come. But for now, I have found a peaceful path in the shadow of the glory of the Lord. In the shadow of the glory of the Lord. Me and my Eddie.